The economy today is unsustainable. Every city, every state, every local government, every federal government in every country is massively in debt.
Shit, I'm massively in debt.
I'm massively in debt. We're all massively in debt. The road to Ruta theory, you know, a lot of people saying it's too good to be true. A lot of people saying it's too off the wall to be true. A lot of people saying it scares me more than, you know, the one world government type of thing. This little girl and this little boy, the little girl's name is Ruta, R-O-O-T-A. Little boy's name is Rocky. I know this is sounding bizarre, but keep working with me.
Oh yeah, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the metaphor is as we go along. So keep
exactly. Yeah. So was I. I'm like, what would happen if all of a sudden the country that Ruta lived in stopped trading with everybody else? What would happen if all of a sudden products that were made in other places couldn't be made in the country where Ruta lived? Who are these people? What does Ruta mean? Well, what this is really is, it's the conspiracy behind the conspiracy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. Hope you all are having a great holiday season so far. We have got a fantastic episode of the program on tap for you here this week, so let's dive right in. Our guest this week is financial analyst Bix Weir, and he's joining BOA Audio for his first ever interview concerning the Road to Ruta conspiracy theory that he has been researching for the last 3 years. At the risk of spoiling the whole conversation for you, I'll just sort of give you a little look at the Road to Ruta theory, and it suggests that there are not only sinister factions behind the scenes of the financial institutions, but also benevolent factions working on behalf of the best interests of all of us. And there's been sort of a quiet war being waged between these two factions over the last 40 years or so. That's sort of the general idea of the Road to Ruta, but trust me, it is much, much more than just that. As such, here in the conversation, Bix is going to detail exactly what the Road to Ruta entails, how he discovered it, what the Road to Ruta actually means, because it's certainly a very intriguing name for a conspiracy theory. He'll also tell us who the players are behind it and provide a timeline for events as they may unfold. In addition to that, over the course of the conversation, we're also going to discuss the economy in general, the inherent problems with a fiat money system, the debate over returning to a gold standard, the story of Yamashita's gold, how silver fits into this whole equation, and what people should be doing to prepare for the potential collapse of the economy. In light of all these topics, hopefully your eyes have not glossed over at the prospect of another financial-themed edition of the program. For the folks out there who are, like me, just sort of tangentially following this economic situation, trust me, we definitely tailored this interview for both camps, the lay people, of which I am certainly a part of, and the hardcore students of the economy. So there's plenty of information in there for everybody, and having listened to it again during the editing process, I think you'll really find the give and take between Bix and I to be quite entertaining, as you can kind of hear the wheels turning and me putting the pieces into place as Bix spells out the Road to Ruta theory and what it all means. Altogether, really, it is an educational, entertaining, and somewhat terrifying edition of the program that will certainly have you watching the mainstream financial news with a more jaundiced eye as Bix Weir takes us down the Road to Ruta. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Bix Weir, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Bix Weir is a freelance author and analyst dedicated to exposing the long-term manipulation of the gold and silver markets. He is the creator of the Road to Ruta theory and founder of the website RoadToRuta.com. Bix has worked closely with the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA, helping to pull the curtain away from the cabal of international bankers that have taken control of our free market system. His website, as noted, is RoadToRuta.com. All one word, let me spell it out for you. Road to Ruta, ROOTA.com. Check it out. With all that said, and without any further ado, let's get down to business here and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on November 9th, 2010. Bix Weir talking about the Road to Ruta financial conspiracy theory on BOA Audio Season 6. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio Season 6. And we have got a very cool edition of the program on tap for you here this week. Our guest is giving his first interview ever with regards to his latest research. He is Bix Weir. He's the man behind the Road to Ruta theory. And this is a surprisingly positive conspiracy theory, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to get him on the program so bad once I discovered his research, because so many people in the conspiracy theory realm are pretty much just telling you that we're shit out of luck, which, I mean, come on, we already know that. So what's the conspiracy? But Bix Weir has a really interesting take on what's going on right now with the financial situation, and he postulates that things are looking better than we think. And just to sort of give you a thumbnail look at what the Road to Ruta theory is before we dive into the conversation, the Road to Ruta theory, and that's Ruta spelled R-O-O-T-A, and he'll explain all that as we get into the interview. The Road to Ruta theory postulates that there's a group of people in the United States as well as around the world that are working to remove and destroy the financial banking powers that have secretly controlled all aspects of our lives. The original idea of this group sprang from the mind of Alan Greenspan and involved rigging the markets with computer programs that he had invented in the 1960s, and we are currently in the final phase of this plan, which entails destroying the fiat monetary system and replacing it with a gold-backed currency. So that's some remarkable stuff right there, and we're going to dig into it big time here with our guest this week, Bix Weir. Welcome to the program, Bix. Thank you for choosing BOA Audio as the first place you've come on to discuss this groundbreaking research.
Hey, Tim. Thanks for having me on, and I'm real excited about talking about all this.
Absolutely, for sure. I'm excited as well. Now, let's start out, obviously, with, you know, who is Bix Weir? What's your bio? What's your background? And how did you stumble into or discover what you think is the Road to Ruta?
Well, I've been working in the finance industry for about 25 years now, and a little different slant on it. I've been, basically, my job in finance is to look at assets and determine what future values are. So, for example, if we're leasing a large piece of equipment, like a piece of mining equipment, my job would say, okay, 10 years down the line, this piece of equipment is going to be worth, you know, $500,000 or whatever I thought that value of that used asset was.
Yeah.
So a lot of my training and research is in not looking necessarily at the present, but looking at the future and seeing what type of trends will tend to sway the asset values and things like that, which kind of got me into, okay, what's going on in the future? What's going on with mining equipment and the value of commodities and the value of the dollar. And a lot of my research went into the value of the dollar, and which automatically kind of steers you to gold and the gold markets.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. That seems to be a big part of all this here. So I guess I sort of spelled out the Road to Ruta theory, the thumbnail of it, but why don't you tell us, you know, what exactly is the Road to Ruta theory? You know, extrapolate more on that, and obviously tell us how, you know, you first came to find out about this, or, you know, put it all together, I guess you could say.
Sure. Well, in my early days of researching gold, one of the first places I went was GATA, which is the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Mm-hmm. I worked a lot with Bill Murphy over there at GATA on his website, the Le Metropole Cafe. and did a lot of writing for them. And what I was trying to do was trying to get to the guts of what was going on in the gold market, because every time something happened in the outside market, gold seemed to react in an opposite direction. For example, if there's a war, normally gold would go up, but we saw gold going down. If they decided to print more money, normally gold would go up, but it kept going down as soon as the announcement happened. So we knew the early days of GATA, we knew that there was somebody in there rigging the markets. You know, we in the beginning thought it was the bullion banks, the J.P. Morgans, the Goldman Sachs's, and then the more we got in touch with what was really going on and put the pieces together, we started finding out it's got to do with the Federal Reserve, it's got to do with the Treasury, and it's got to do a lot with people in Congress. So, you know, in the early days, it was a lot of digging and searching and rooting around, especially the Federal Reserve archives, which they have an online archive where you can go in and search their database going back 40, 50 years. And I would put in gold as my search word and get, you know, hundreds of documents about gold.
Yeah.
Most of it, the most boring stuff you ever saw in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And even for a gold bug like me, it wasn't that exciting. But what did strike me as odd was one day I was searching around the Federal Reserve Boston website, mm-hmm. and they have a portion of their sites that's dedicated to just educational resources.
Yeah.
It's called Economic Education Publications. And in that, they have little pamphlets that they hand out, a lot about, like, closing of banks, what was money in the early days of America, things like that. But one day in early 2007, they posted three kind of comic book type of pamphlets. It struck me right away, what are these things? Why is the Federal Reserve publishing a comic book?
Yeah, that's strange.
It was really weird. And not only that, but on the site where they kind of show the cover of all their publications, all three of these comic books had big red exclamation points after them.
Hmm.
And they had literally just been posted, because I'd been on that site a few days earlier, and they were posted on January 1st, 2007. So I opened up the first one, which was called Wishes and Rainbows. And it's a really odd comic about this little girl and this little boy. The little girl's name is Ruta, R-O-O-T-A. The little boy's name is Rocky. And they live in this world where there's no color. It's very bland, and it's basically they take you through the town, and there's a bunch of little people who live in a world of no color. And above, and this is all underground, and above ground, there's these big people, they call them. And these big people are these scary people who nobody wants to talk to, nobody has any access to.
Yeah.
And through, I know this is sounding bizarre, but keep working with me.
Oh, yeah, I'm trying to figure out exactly what the metaphor is as we go along. So keep
exactly. Yeah. So was I. I'm like, why would the Federal Reserve be publishing a really odd comic like this? So the more I read it, the more I learned it was about scarcity. And what happens in this comic is Ruta, the little girl, finds a colored flower. And it's the most coveted thing in the whole land, because their land is full of just grays and blacks,
yeah.
Black and white. So she finds this colored flower, and she brings it to her grandmother, who always heard about the land of colored flowers and always wanted to see it. And then all of a sudden, this flower, everybody wants it.
Yeah.
And she brings it to the mayor, and he says, well, let's put it in the middle of the town square so everybody can see it. And it's this whole story about scarcity and how many people wanted that colored flower, but there wasn't enough colored flowers, and how could Ruta go out and find more colored flowers. And in the whole time, I was thinking, what has this got to do with the Federal Reserve Bank?
Exactly, yeah.
And then I opened the next little publication, which is called The Road to Ruta, A Teacher's Guide.
Hmm.
And in that publication, it relates the story of these kids living in a non-colored world, all of a sudden introducing color, it relates that to scarcity and how things we want in life are more valuable if they're more scarce. And then it even relates it to the dollar. It starts talking about the tulip mania back in the early or the late 1800s in Europe, where they coveted tulip bulbs.
Yes.
It's the first basic bubble that popped.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay.
And all this time I'm thinking, well, what does this all mean? How does this all relate to money? And then they have in the Road to Ruta teacher's guide, it talks about if you wanted to use a colored flower as money, how valuable would it be? What happens if they introduce more colored flowers? And I mean, basically it's an analogy towards the dollar being backed by something and the dollar being fiat, being unbacked. That was the start of it all. And it took me a while to get my head around, well, what does that really mean? Until I looked at some of the questions they asked in this guidebook. Questions like, what would happen if all of a sudden the country that Ruta lived in stopped trading with everybody else? What would happen if all of a sudden products that were made in other places couldn't be made in the country where Ruta lived? To me, it starts thinking, okay, if they're going to relate this to the United States, what does it mean? So that's kind of where it all started. Where I took it from there is I looked at who was it that was writing this, these comics?
Yeah.
It was written originally by a woman named Deborah Carpenter Beck. And it was written as a short story for the Federal Reserve. And then it was adapted by this guy named Stephen Dubow. And Stephen Dubow, after doing a bunch of research on him, actually worked at the Federal Reserve Bank Boston for 8 or 9 years during the 70s and early 80s. What he is he is an expert in project implementation, and he's an expert in computers. So I'm like, oh, well, what does this guy have to do with, you know, this story? And the more I dug into it, it turns out that Stephen Dubow works for the Federal Reserve Bank, and I assume he worked in the computer division because to be an expert in computers in the 70s, you know,
yeah,
you would use that because there weren't many computer experts in the 70s.
Exactly, yeah.
From there, he went on to Citibank to implement, for 1 year, to implement their computer programs. And then he went right to Fidelity to implement their computer programs. And then he went to IBM, a division of IBM, to set up some of their computer programs. And I'm like, this guy is pretty well connected. And his resume, which I found somewhere on the internet, never talked about him working at the Federal Reserve. That was kind of his secret. His secret is that he worked at Federal Reserve, but nobody knew about it.
Interesting. And what's he making this comic book for? It doesn't even...
That's where it gets, you know, into more and more research. Who are these people? What does Ruta mean? Now, Ruta, R-O-O-T-A, I did internet searches. I'm like, what is that? Ruta is actually the basic foundation of very early computer programmers. It stands for root A. It's the root of the financial computing that was invented in the early 70s. And actually, the guy who invented, most people don't know this, the guy who invented financial computing was none other than Alan Greenspan.
Huh.
He, in the 60s and 70s, was basically a computer geek. He was an economist who loved to run computer programs. This is back at the beginning of computers. So that's kind of the link I got back to Greenspan, the root A, and then in the comic, if you read the comic Wishes and Rainbows, the little girl Ruta goes to her grandmother. And there's a scene in there where she talks about to her grandma how she wants to bring colors into the colorless land. And all the words in that one section are underlined. She says, why can't I bring colors? And the grandmother says, because the people who live in color land are very big and they blow that up and might accidentally step on any pebble person who visits. It's really bizarre, but they underline all these inferences to the people who run the financial system behind the scenes. And when I link it all together, it all points towards Ruta talking to her grandmother about bringing colors back into her life or bringing a gold-backed system into America.
Interesting. Okay.
And obviously it sounds like a stretch right now. But all the things that have followed have supported that original theory. For example, the new $100 bill. The new $100 bill is filled with gold references. It's the 100 that they just announced.
Yeah.
That supposedly is going to come out in February, although they said they're going to delay it. That $100 bill, if you look at it, on the left side is just a regular greenback. On the right side is full of gold inferences, including a gold Liberty Bell, a gold fountain pen, a gold 100, the words that we reserve the right to overthrow our government. All these things are on the new $100 bill that they've literally been holding back for 2 or 3 years.
Okay, so essentially what you're saying is that the faction, I guess you could say, behind the scenes that's trying to crash the economy so we can switch away from fiat money in order to back to a gold-backed standard.
Kind of. We're at that point now where they want to crash it. Originally, the reason they did it in the very beginning was there was two economic theories that won Nobel Prizes in the 60s about asset allocation. What's the best way to allocate assets for a population?
Yeah.
And they're called the Road to the Golden Age, and the other one was the Golden Rule Theory. And both of those said that the best way to go back from an unbacked currency to a backed currency is to use that fiat money to its fullest. Print as much money as you possibly can, build as many roads, build as many houses as you can until that currency implodes. Because there's obvious advantages to creating fiat money if you have control of it. You can build everything you want. There's nothing limiting you except the amount of fiat dollars you print.
All right. Okay. I'm starting to come together here a little bit for me. Okay. So you're saying is that the plan all along is to implode the money in a sense.
It was, and that's what Stephen Duveau brought to the table in his theory is project management and running that project out for as long as possible with the most benefits as possible. He's written best-selling books on it, and that was the idea. Back in 71, when Nixon went off the gold standard, everybody thought, well, there's no way fiat money could last because who in their right mind would accept a piece of paper?
Yeah.
And, every single unbacked currency has crashed. The longest, I think, was the Mississippi land grants back in the late 1800s. It lasted 17 years. Well, this has lasted since, 71?
Yeah, so about 40, almost 40 years.
Exactly. But the only reason this has worked is because of Alan Greenspan's programs, computer rigging programs that are still running today and run out of the Fed out in New York, along with, some of the bullion banks, those programs that rigged the markets. So there literally is a little man behind the curtain pulling the levers of all our markets today.
To sort of tie this into, I guess you could say, generalized conspiracy theory, the big idea behind all that is that the big bankers and the banksters and stuff are, they're obviously in control of the world, essentially, because they control the money.
Right.
I presume, based on what you're saying here at the Road to Ruta website and everything else, is that that Greenspan and this DeVoe guy and all the people who are a part of the Road to Ruta faction, that they're sort of acting independently of the big men upstairs, I guess you could say, at the Fed. Is that accurate? Or is the Fed in on this?
It what happened was, somewhere along the way, probably in the later Reagan years, the bad guys, let's call them, the banksters, the Illuminati, whatever you want to call them, got a hold and control of the market rigging systems.
Okay.
And it probably happened right at the end of Reagan's time, because in the beginning, Reagan wanted to go right to a gold standard right away. At the end, he was mentally incapacitated by the time he left office, and then you had Bush Sr. taking over.
Yeah.
And he was all over the market rigging. He was, you know, had been involved with all the gold from Yamashita's gold and things like that. And basically what happened was the good guys lost control. And then what has happened since, ever since 9/11, which is also part of the Wishes and Rainbows comic, ever since 9/11, the good guys said, that's enough of this. We're going to give these guys enough rope so they can hang themselves. Financial leeway. Take all the rules away, and we know they're gonna hang themselves. That was why Greenspan didn't ever say, I want more regulation. He knew that as much rope as he gave these people, they would take it and abuse it, and that's where we are now, and they have literally hung themselves.
And we're on the verge, you think, of the implosion that would force us back to a gold standard.
Yeah, the basically we tried to do it in 2008. The good guys tried to do it, and we came close. It was, you know, we were on the brink. That's when Paulson went to Congress and said, we need $700 billion. And that's basically, it bought them 2 years. But that 2 years is up, and right now, you can see it everywhere, that all the regulators are acting like regulators finally. Because all this time before, those regulators had kind of a dual purpose. One was to sort of regulate the markets, but two was to run cover for the official manipulation. The official rigging of the gold market and the currency markets and the silver market so that you can run that fiat currency out as long as you can to get the most benefit out of it.
Now, theoretically, the bad guys, if you will, I guess you could say, as you'd like to call them, they're pretty smart. Wouldn't they know what Greenspan and these guys are doing, and how come they haven't tried to, like, put a stop to it, if they even can, I guess, because it sounds like fiat backed currencies is a doomed proposition in the first place.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, in the beginning, the good guys, the original good guys, Greenspan, Stephen DuVaux, I write about a couple others in my on my website. Ron Paul got involved. Barney Frank, believe it or not, got involved back when in the early Reagan days.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, they were very, very secretive. Incredibly secretive, because they knew, you know, for example, you know, it might be a conspiracy theory, but Kennedy was most likely killed by the bankers or a faction of the bankers.
Yeah, for introducing the American currency, a separate.
Well, yeah, trying to get us back onto a silver standard, and you know, he was going to introduce new silver dollars, new silver-backed currency. So he was killed, and all of a sudden, all the good guys kind of went into hiding, and Alan Greenspan back in the 60s, if you remember, he was the biggest gold bug you ever met in your life. And then in 1973 or 74, Gerald Ford appointed him the head of the CEA, the Council of Economic Advisors.
Yeah.
That's when he implemented his computer programs to rig the markets so that the fiat currency can continue.
Interesting.
And the person who got him in there was Arthur Burns, who was the Fed chair at the time. And that's kind of where the beginning of my research was in the Fed archives, looking at all the Fed meetings and minutes from the late 60s and early 70s. Arthur Burns wanted to go back on the gold standard, but there were kind of embedded bad guys in the Federal Reserve. You know, the Federal Reserve isn't all bad. There's thousands of people who work for the Federal Reserve. Vast majority of them are good people.
Oh, yeah.
There are a few controllers, there have been over the years, that secretly work for either the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers or whoever it is that is behind the scenes.
Yeah, the Illuminati-ish.
Yeah, and Arthur Burns was trying to kick them out, and you can read the old meeting, the minutes of those meetings, and he was livid. But he was the head of the Fed at the time, and he was also Greenspan's mentor. So he got Greenspan in to the head of the CEA for Gerald Ford, and that's when he started implementing the computer programs with Stephen DuVaux to run the markets. And then in 1997, when Greenspan was elected head of the Fed, that's when they tried to crash the system the first time. And that's when you had the first banking scandal at the end of the 80s.
Oh, the savings and loan?
The savings and loan scandal. That was Greenspan trying to crash the market. He didn't have enough backing. He didn't have enough people. He didn't have a buy-in of the citizenry of the United States. Kind of like what happened in 2008. In 2008, we were all kind of, you know, I wasn't, but a lot of people were wandering around not knowing what was going on.
Yeah, it was a very confusing time because they didn't really explain what exactly was happening, yeah.
Exactly, but look what's happened in the last 2 years. There's been a massive education program for the common people of the United States. You can walk down the street now and people will tell you about quantitative easing or printing money or, you know, how bad the Fed is, how bad it is to print money or bailouts. They'll tell you how bad that stuff is.
Yeah, you're starting to see recognition from average people talking about how, you know, they're printing the money out of thin air and pretty much exposing the fiat system when normally that was something that was really confined to economists and people in the esoteric. So it's certainly bursting into the mainstream for sure.
And that wasn't even that long ago. I mean, 5 years ago, I'd talk about this stuff with people and they'd say, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
You know, the dollar will never go away and things like that. And now people are starting to question that.
Now, to jump back a little bit, okay, so they have this plan here underway. Why would they print this comic book up on the website? I'm sure it's sort of an obscure website in a way that, you know, it's not like it was on CNN or something like that. But why would they even float that sort of hint out there?
It's an excellent question, and these comics are actually the second edition. The first edition of Wishes and Rainbows and The Road to Ruta was released by the Fed in 1981 when they had the Gold Commission that was meeting to talk about. It's back when gold hit $800 and inflation was going through the roof, and they were meeting. They had a huge meeting. It went on for a year. And there's a Gold Commission report that came out. This cartoon came out that very time when they were talking about returning to a gold standard in 1981. And now, literally, they updated it. They put new graphics on it. But word for word, it is exactly the same. They released it in 2007, just when they were literally going to try to get back onto a gold standard. And I don't know if your listeners follow Ben Fulford or anything like that, but it was July of 2007 that Ben Fulford met with David Rockefeller and said, "It's time for the bad guys to stand down. We've got, you know, whatever he said, 10,000 ninjas that'll kill you unless you stand down." Which is, you can find that on the internet, but, you know, just watching Ben Fulford interview David Rockefeller with a big orange microphone will make you laugh. David Rockefeller doesn't even give interviews, much less to some bizarre guy in a little hotel room in Japan.
Now, I've got a pretty good idea of sort of what you've laid out for us here, and bear with me because I'm not, you know, as I'm sure you know, because you're knee deep in or neck deep in the economics, that this is certainly sort of a very esoteric art form, for lack of a better term. So I'm trying to keep it as, you know, mainstreamized or down to earth and understandable for myself and for the listeners. Obviously,
it's truthfully, even senior economic guys I talk to about this don't quite get it, and it is hard to understand until you kind of get the grasp.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm starting to get a grasp on this. So essentially what you're saying is, you know, they got rid of the gold standard in 71, then it was a pure fiat system, and these good guys behind the scenes realized that that was never going to last. So they sort of got things set up via computer programs to eventually push us back into a gold-backed system.
Correct.
Unbeknownst to the bad guys. Who are essentially
to everybody, basically.
Yeah. Well, come on, everybody. Most most people are too consumed with Lady Gaga to worry about the economy. So, unbeknownst to the bad guys who want to pretty much just continue using the fiat system as long as possible to take advantage of you know, the ignorance of the American people and the global population.
Well, no, it was an original idea of the good guys. It was the original idea of Alan Greenspan, and, you know, he was working with, you know, even Ron Paul in the early days. And the idea was, based on these economic theories from the 60s, to run the fiat money system to get full advantage of it. And full advantage means as long as you can, profiting as much as you can from it until it runs out. And that's kind of where we are now.
Okay.
That's why you've heard of, you know, the QE2, the $600 billion that Bernanke is creating out of thin air. And all these programs that Obama and the Democrats have been throwing forward and all the money spent and the Reagan Star Wars, all that is, the idea was, we're going to ruin the dollar to get us back to a gold standard. We're going to use all this money and build roads and buildings and houses, and then we're going to crash the system, and everybody gets to keep their house, and we go back to gold standard.
Okay, that's the good guy's plan. Now, what contrast
that was the good guy's plan, right?
What do the bad guys want then?
Well, the bad guys, if you remember, back in the early 70s, basically there was kind of a coup in America. The bad guys has pretty much taken over Congress and the Federal Reserve, and basically they were running the country.
Yeah.
And in order to do this, the good guys had to do it in secret, in small committees, and things like that. What the bad guys wanted, I believe, and you know, this is backed up by a lot of the conspiracy guys, is to decrease the size of the population.
Okay.
They were going to introduce diseases and natural disasters and all this stuff. That was their way. That was their end game. And even set off a couple EMPs, the electromagnetic pulses.
Yeah.
Have you heard about that? But, you know, those two satellites that were – there have been two satellites that were taken out of commission by rockets. One was above China and one was above the U.S. You know, my contention is I think those were the EMPs that the bad guys had planned to set off, and the good guys said, you know, get these out of here. We're not going to do that.
And then essentially lower the population and then form a global government, probably.
Exactly, yeah. You know, that gets back into all the one world government and all that stuff that, you know, any conspiracy guy can find on the internet.
Okay.
What this is really is, it's the conspiracy behind the conspiracy.
Interesting. All right. You're saying the road to Ruta is the conspiracy behind
the road to Ruta is. You know, for years, even my friends at GATA, and GATA is pretty much a conspiracy type of organization. You know, they're now mainstream conspiracy because a lot of what they said about gold market rigging and silver market rigging is being proved. And there's actual documents and data and whistleblowers and all that. This is one step beyond that.
Now, what about the idea that they want the dollar to crash so that they can then introduce some new form of the dollar, some new form of fiat money that would be like the Amero or something like that?
That was 2 years ago. That was the plan. That for some, the diehard, you know, bad guys, that's still the plan. That's what they want.
So everybody, right, the good guys and the bad guys, want to crash the economy.
They both want to crash the economy. Here's the reason. The economy today is unsustainable.
Yeah.
Every city, every state, every local government, every federal government in every country is massively in debt.
Shit, I'm massively in debt.
I'm massively in debt. We're all massively in debt. And the way money works is you have to keep creating more money just to pay interest on the money that you already created. So it's unsustainable. Now, what happens if there is, for example, take a bank, any bank, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, they're both knee-deep in derivatives. J.P. Morgan has over $100 trillion in derivatives. Bank of America has $50 trillion. Either one of those banks go down, and it would wipe out every single bank in the world. You would wake up one day, you'd go to your bank, and they wouldn't be open. But the good thing about wiping out banks is you not only wipe out, you know, savings accounts, checking accounts, 401k, you also wipe out debt.
Exactly.
So if the banks are gone, yeah, you lose your savings. You lose your checking. You lose your 401k. You lose your stock holdings. You lose everything. But every single state, local government, every single person would get to start fresh. They're calling it a debt jubilee.
Yeah, I've heard about that, but what's to say that that, okay, so everybody wants, you know, the good guys and the bad guys want the economy to crash. What's to say that the bad guys aren't going to win here and we're not going to go to a gold standard? We're going to go to, you know, a Fiat Amaro.
That's going to depend on us. That's what these last 2 years of training the American public has been all about.
Okay.
People are ready to stand up now. They weren't ready 2 years ago. They're ready to stand up and say, no more bankers, no more bailouts. They stole all our money. When these banks crash, everybody will be looking at each other going, what in the world is going on? And they will put the blame directly on the bankers, on the military-industrial complex, on all those guys. And the good thing about the United States, and Ron Paul talks about this already, is that we have history in this area. We have a history of leaving England's control and starting fresh. We have a constitution.
This is starting to come together now, so I'm getting more invested here in this, no pun intended, in this theory, in this conversation. So it really, there's no guarantee that the good guys are going to win this thing.
No, not at all. And truthfully, it will be up to the people, of America. All that Tea Party stuff, there's a reason for that. It's getting people back to our Constitution, to our sovereign rights as a nation. And once this goes down, which I believe will be in the next few weeks, so I'm hoping this interview will actually get aired. But once this happens, and the first bank goes down, and then all the follow-on banks go down, the United States, and I'm just talking the United States right now, is going to stand up and say, we're going to take care of our own country. We're going to pull every troop out of every country. We're going to stop trading because, you know, when we default on the dollar, basically, no one's going to like us very much.
Yeah.
Right? China will be fine because, you know, all our multinational companies built factories over there. They'll just shut their borders. They have plenty of customers. The only thing they needed was our paper fiat dollars, and, you know, they know better than we do that they're worthless. So they'll just take our factories and call it even. And we'll bring all our manufacturing back home. We'll have plenty to do because, you know, we import almost everything. We're going to have to build up from scratch. We'll stick our troops on the borders.
Now, what do you say to people that say, you know, Bix, this is quite a theory. It's almost too good to be true. It's unbelievable in a way. Things can't turn out that good for us. It's going to be, you know, the dollar's going to crash. People are going to go crazy, start killing each other and hoarding water.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be, you know, you're going to wake up one day and, you know, the dollar crash. Look, we have a new gold currency and they're going to allocate it. You know, my theory is what they do in the comics. They allocate flowers according to age. And Alan Greenspan back in the 70s was in charge of Social Security. He was in charge of fixing it. So what they'll do is when all money's gone, they'll reallocate the new money according to Social Security. How much have you paid in? And you'll get that. You know, a couple hundred bucks might not seem like a lot when there's a zillion fiat dollars out there, but when everybody has a couple hundred bucks, you're pretty much rich. You're as rich as everybody else.
That's true. That's for sure. Now, you said everything's kind of come into line, I guess you could say, with the Road to Ruta theory since you first uncovered it a few years ago. So I guess take me through a little bit of how you see that having played out and then how you see it playing out going forward.
Sure. Well, my theory has been, you know, I developed it since the comics came out in 2007. It links in with everything you hear going on with the Tea Party, with what Ron Paul is saying. You know, about a year ago, everybody's saying, oh, we've recovered and, you know, the economy's back on track. You know, all that came from Larry Summers out of, you know, and Alan Goolsbee, who were basically working for Obama. Larry Summers, his whole theory on economics is behavioral economics. If you say things are okay, people will believe it and go out and spend, and thus it'll make it okay.
Yeah.
That's what he teaches at Harvard. So that's what they were doing. You know, I wrote two articles the beginning of 2009 in, I believe it was March, exactly when the bottom of the market hit, because I heard Larry Summer, I heard Obama, I heard Alan Goolsbee all saying, oh, we've hit the bottom, and watch, things are going to change. And all I have to do is, you know, kick in their little market programs to jack the stock market a little bit, and everybody bought into it. And I called it literally on the day that, but it won't last forever. It's all phantom money chasing some phantom. You know, if you go out on Main Street, you're not going to hear about people doing real well. But the stock market's, you know, back up to the highest levels it's been.
Talk a little bit more about this computer program part of it all, because I don't understand exactly what you mean by how Greenspan and this DeVoe guy implemented computer programs to manipulate the market. What exactly do these computer programs do?
Well, what they do is, with any computer trading program, the thing you hear about today with computer trading programs are flash crashes and high-frequency trading, things like that.
Yeah.
That's all. You know, a computer can do almost anything you program it to do. And if you have the regulators on your side, you can literally do anything with them. Mm-hmm. For example, with gold, you can program into your computer to buy and sell to itself to set the price of gold at $9,999. And no matter how many trades go on that day, 99% of them will be you trading to yourself, and it'll end up at the end of that day at $999.
Okay.
And some of the reasons we know this is that the bad guys, when they had the control of it, I remember vividly 4 days in a row that gold stopped trading at $666. They were trying to give us a message, 666. And everybody's like, oh, this market's rigged. Well, of course it's rigged. But you can use that on stocks. You can use it on bonds. You can use it on anything that trades because today over 90% of all trades are computer generated. So as far as free markets, there is none. And there haven't been any free markets, truly free markets, since the 70s, before the 70s.
Okay. All right. That extrapolates it a little bit. I guess talk a little bit, just to jump into some other stuff that's from the website within this realm. You mentioned it previously here, and I've heard about it in other places as well, but I know a lot of people haven't heard about this whole Yamashita's gold story. So talk about the Yamashita's gold story and then, you know, how it relates to this whole Road to Ruta theory.
Sure. Well, back in at the end of World War II, when we were just about to beat the Japanese, they found out that the Japanese, through the last 50 years, had pillaged all of Asia for gold. Mm-hmm. They were obsessed with gold. They'd go in and conquer and take gold. Yamashita was the emperor or premier of Japan. And when he heard that the U.S., or he felt that the U.S. was going to win, what he did is he took all the gold that they had accumulated and he hid it in the Philippines. And there was, I think, 180 or so different sites where literally they're booby-trapped, they're dug into tunnels, and it contained a massive amount of gold, more gold than anybody thought was ever mined in the world. And the U.S. found this gold through MacArthur and some of his men. And from that time in the late 40s, when they found the gold and started to extract it, they determined that they shouldn't tell anybody. For the number one reason, not just to be greedy, but back then we were on a gold standard. The introduction of, say, 300,000 tons of gold, when the world thought there was only 120,000 or however much there was at that time,
yeah,
it would destroy the U.S. dollar. It would destroy the gold currency because all of a sudden there would be gold everywhere. So they said, okay, we're not going to tell anybody about this gold, and we'd probably have to give it back to all those other Asian countries. We're going to keep this a huge secret, and we're going to use it as we need it for covert ops, and we're going to set up these banks as kind of the prime dealers of this gold. And that's kind of where the whole banking cabal came about and where they got their funds, and that led into the CIA problems and all the dark things in our history. And you can go onto the web and look up Yamashita's gold, or it's also known as the Golden Lily Treasure. There was a book written about it by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave, and they did massive amounts of research on this stuff. And almost all of it is obtained from public documents. They also have hundreds of pages of documentation that I actually have, and a lot of people have, that show all these gold transactions that have gone on, secret gold transactions all around the world ever since this money was discovered, or this gold was discovered. I have an article called Golden Secrets on my website that talks about that, but there's even a bigger secret that, I don't have any confirmation. There's been no books written about it. There's just some old New York Times articles about this vein of gold that was found in Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've heard about, the Egyptian artifacts found in the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, I've heard about a lot of strange discoveries in the Grand Canyon.
There's a lot of strange stuff going on there, and it is all a military no-go zone.
Yeah.
You can't go in there. You can't mess with it. Nobody touches it. Bush Jr. even tried to go in there and excavate, and they wouldn't let him. Supposedly, there is a gigantic vein of gold in there, more gold than has ever been discovered in the history of the world.
Wow.
And the idea all along with the United States since the early 1900s was our natural resource policy has been to hide everything we have on our own land and use everybody else's first. So every time we poke a hole in the ground and we find oil, we're going to cap it and say, I don't know what's here. I don't know what's in Alaska. I don't know what's in the Gulf. And because we know, as long as we can use the dollar, we can use those pieces of paper to buy the rest of the world's natural resources. Because one day, and that day's coming soon, people won't accept that dollar anymore. And at that point in time, we're going to have to close our borders and just use what we have. So we've been hoarding natural resources for almost 100 years.
Interesting.
Probably over 100 years.
Okay, now, I'm trying to think about where we should go next with this. I guess, obviously, you said this book's been written about Yamashita's gold, so it's not like this is some huge, UFO-esque conspiracy that the mainstream wouldn't have access to. But when do you think the knowledge of Yamashita's gold will be revealed, to the public, and they'll become educated about it, and how? How would that all come about?
I think it's all coming to a head now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why. The big secret, the big secret behind all the secrets in the United States, behind the CIA, behind everything, one, there is the UFO issue, and that is a big one. And that's something that at some point they're going to have to tell people.
Yeah.
The other big secret is the U.S. dollar. The value of the U.S. dollar and the rigging of the market and the rigging of the gold market, that covers almost every single national security secret that we've tried to keep over the last 50 or 60 years. It's the rigging of the gold market to keep the dollar sound. Because if gold goes crazy, the dollar is done. Because it's the only alternative.
Well, what do you mean if gold goes crazy? What does that mean?
Gold goes to $10,000 an ounce.
$20,000,
$30,000, $100,000 an ounce. People will say, oh my God, this isn't a gold issue. This is a U.S. dollar issue.
And then what happens? They bust out all the Yamashita's gold? We're like, shit, we're rich.
Well, here's where we are now, is that the government's trying to print as much as they can because they want it done. People are suffering in the country. They want this whole fiat mess to end.
Yeah.
So that's why you have $600 billion here, a trillion here, $100 billion here. That's what they're trying to do. They're breaking it. They're going to break the banks. And once that's done, remember, once the banks are out, all fiat money is gone. Nobody has a penny. You have your hard assets. You have your house, I guess. You have your car. Whoever's got gold and silver. You've got, your boat.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to have to reallocate money. Now, in the United States, we've been planning for this for at least 40 years. There's a lot of hidden gold that we have stashed away.
To use as the basis of a new gold standard.
Exactly. Exactly. And remember, when there's no other money, it doesn't take a lot of gold. If everybody gets 3 pieces of gold, everybody's rich. 3 pieces would be 1 billion ounces.
And then what happens if you spend your 3 pieces? How do you get more gold?
That's exactly where we are. It would be a start over. And then people would get allocated money, probably based on Social Security is my guess. because that's what they did in the Road to Ruta thing. You know, oldest get the most, the youngest, you know, will get some as they grow and they work and they get some of the gold.
Yeah.
So people will get reallocated money and then will just function again. And, you know, over time, the smarter will get the more money. The spendthrifts, you know, the crazy spenders will lose theirs, things like that, and everything will even out again, but it is a restart, and it takes out this evil banking cabal who's ruled us for so long.
Couldn't the gold standard be just as easily manipulated as the fiat currencies, or is that something that if you destroy the banks, then there'll always be somebody who wants to manipulate for wealth.
It's true. Truthfully, there is no perfect money. The longer you study money and the history of money, you'll find that there is no perfect money. Gold is as close to perfect as you can get because of the scarcity. It's easily divisible. It's rare. And it has a history. It has a history of thousands of years as being money, whereas today, these electronic blips that we call our assets.
Yeah.
I mean, you think the tulip people, we laugh at them for believing that tulips had value. What do you think they would say to us when they see that we believed in electronic blips?
Yeah.
Was our assets had value?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That could end in a blink of an eye. One solar flare or an EMP and all of a sudden there's no more wealth.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, everything got erased. So the way you see it then is, to sort of look at the timeline of this, hopefully you're about a month off because we'll get this episode posted in December. So it's clear things are getting kind of weird right now. So do you feel like we're like sort of teetering on the ultimate collapse here of this whole thing? Because I've been hearing that in a lot of places too. So you're not the only one saying that this economy is due for even a worse turn than people think.
Yeah. Well, working on a theory that I'm working on, A lot of it has to do with what is the future going to bring. Everything I work on is geared towards steering people towards this is our most likely future. This is our potential future if we want it. Now, I've been on most of my stuff, I've been right on the content and I've been right about the players. I've been wrong on timing. Timing has always been my issue as to, you know, when things are going to happen.
Yeah, and that's always the most difficult part.
Always the most difficult. And here's an interesting thing. I don't know if you and your listeners listen to Cliff High at all. Cliff High of halfpasthuman.com, he's put together this linguistics program that's unbelievable, unmatched in predicting when things are going to happen.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
Times and things like that. His problem is he doesn't exactly get the content right. For example, 9/11, he predicted to the minute, but he saw it as a financial problem, a huge financial problem. Now, he's saying that November 14th, just this Sunday, is something 10 to 20 times larger in impact on civilization than 9/11. What could something like that be? Could be a nuclear war, could be some gigantic solar flare, or it could be the end of the fiat money system. Or the beginning of the end, because his window of how long this impact is going to last is 65 days.
Oh, so he's saying starting on the 14th of November, going over the next 65 days.
Actually, his lead-in started on Friday.
Oh, okay.
So Friday to Sunday, you know, we are already seeing the turmoil. You had AMBEC go down, which is the largest, you know, it's like a... not even a mini, just a step below AIG. They declared bankruptcy yesterday. They have trillions in derivatives that are going to go bad. You know, we think AIG was a big problem. AMBEC's just as bad. So all this stuff is happening as we speak, and you see gold and silver breaking out. You know, gold's at 1,400, silver's at, you know, whatever. It was 29 when I looked, and then they slammed it back down to 26. But those breaking out, because the banks are massively naked short on gold and silver.
Yeah.
Massively. If anybody wants to preserve their wealth or get rich, go to your local coin shop, buy an ounce of gold, as many ounces of silver as they have, because that's what the bankers don't want you to do. And those are going to in fiat dollar terms, they're going to go ballistic.
Yeah, this is probably an absolutely terrible idea, and I don't encourage anyone to do this, but what if I went and maxed out my credit cards and bought as much gold as possible? And
that idea comes up all the time, and you know why I don't suggest it? Is karma.
Yeah.
It is pure karma that if you do that, you're going to get back at the bankers. They don't really care because, you know, they're going to lose their stuff anyway. But there is a karma type of situation that I don't suggest it.
Yeah.
But I do suggest taking care of getting out of the electronic financial system as fast as possible.
And what do you mean by that? Like taking all your cash out of the banks?
Yes, to start with.
Interesting, okay.
To start with. You're making no interest anyway in the banks. Take your cash out. Every time you need to pay a bill with a check, go in and put, you know, $50 in the bank.
Yeah.
Because I'll guarantee you, some point in the very near future, your bank's not going to be open for business. Every single bank right now, and I work in the financial industry, every single bank is insolvent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Today.
That's
today.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, banks are leveraged 20 or 30 to 1. So every dollar their assets go up, they make 20 or 30 bucks. It's wonderful as assets go up. As assets go down, for example, housing, for every dollar they lose $30. So if their housing portfolio loses 10%, they've lost 300% of their value.
Okay.
Economy's been a little rough, man.
Ah, man, just brutal.
You know, it's times like these that E-Trade can really help you replan your investments.
Yep.
So, you know, it gives you the tools and research.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Take control. Rise up.
Dude, broken.
No.
What?
Stop.
What? I can't flex the golden pipes?
It's not the venue.
It's inspirational.
Any place.
Fine.
Okay, where was
I? I'm going to fly again.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
No, I'm just poking at your funny bone. I am quite alarmed.